This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. We are back continuing our divisional previews for 2017-18. I'm Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell in a yellow t-shirt, Ryan Kennedy in a black t-shirt. And we're talking about the Metro Division standings, starting at the bottom. First of all, how you guys doing?
I'm doing great, but what is the point of pointing out to people with the color of our t-shirt?
I just want them to visualize, you know, what's happening
right
now.
Oh, and here we are with Matt Larkin, who made his appointment at the hairdresser for this week, later this week.
Yeah, it's Tuesday at 6.
Needs a bit of a haircut.
It's Tuesday at 6 p.m. If anyone wants to come down to the salon. That's right, I said salon.
Tuesday's
Yeah, okay, I'm going to my guy at... That charges me $8 on Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Yeah, who's going to butcher you? He will butcher you.
I'll be out by 6:10. Listen, you're always talking about the quality of my hair when you see me get a haircut. So don't give me
I just point out that you got a haircut. I don't say it's good. I say, hey, you got a haircut. There's a difference, okay? Those guys butcher me, and I'm saying butcher on purpose because that's my segue to the first team in the Metro. It's Will Butcher's new team, the New Jersey Devils. That's
Masterful.
What we have pegged. Yeah, not bad. We've got the Devils picked for 8th. I know the Devils fans are going to be unhappy about that because they've certainly been letting me have it on Twitter all summer long. But I'm sorry, Devils. Just if you look at that depth chart, especially on defense, I mean, there's no team, I think, more talent-starved, especially on the blue line, in the NHL right now. And I know Ray Shiro is doing a good job gradually building up prospects. Nico Hischier, Pavel Zacha, you know, John Quenneville. But this team is still very clearly a long way from contention. Would you guys agree?
I would agree 100%. I think they're doing some good things, but like you say, I mean, you look at that blue line. I mean, I don't want to steal your thunder. I'll let you say it. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Well, with the re-signing of Damon Severson, I looked at the blue line and I wrote the sentence, Damon Severson is the best defenseman on the New Jersey Devils, and I was like, is that hyperbole? Am I out of my mind? And no, he is. Like, Damon Severson is the best guy they have, and he scored 3 goals last year and was a minus 30. And I know, like, plus-minus is a garbage stat, but, like...
Well, no, it's not always a garbage... Not when it's
not
that...
Always.
Not when it's that...
When it's that extreme.
When it's that extreme, it's not a garbage stat. But and the funny thing was that you said was, the good news is the Devils signed their best defenseman. The bad news is... Damon Severson's their best defenseman.
Yeah, they need to get more help for him because, you know, right now, you know, Damon Severson is an emerging defenseman. He's got great size and mobility. There's a lot to like about him, but like he can't be your best defenseman right now. That would be like if Minnesota didn't have Ryan Suter and Jared Spurgeon and Jonas Brodin and Matt Dumba was their number one guy. Like, Matt Dumba's a good young player, but you don't want him carrying the water yet. And what you have in New Jersey is guys like Andy Green and Ben Lovejoy that are, you know, at best second pairing guys.
Yeah, on a good team,
ideally,
bottom pair.
A bottom pair. But that's your sort of veteran ceiling. And... yeah, it's going to be a while for New Jersey.
The Travis Zajac injury probably moves a couple of parts around that sort of, you know, could have been in a better place if he were there. I think what I'm looking for New Jersey this year is I want to see what Taylor Hall does in a leadership role. I want to see him, you know, start to blossom in that respect and really start to sort of take over this team so that when it is... hopefully good in a couple of years, that they'll have the alpha dog there all ready to go. And I think he has to do that at this point. Mm-hmm. I think granted he played for Edmonton, he played for, and now he's playing for New Jersey, pretty tough situations to be in. But, you know, the losing is starting to follow him around a little bit.
Right.
And I think he's got to start to, you know, pull himself out of that.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's to me, it's also telling. Like, you look at a Mirko Mueller, and I was looking at our prospect rankings, and we have Mirko Mueller as New Jersey's number 3 prospect, and Mueller was deemed expendable, a cast-off, almost a bust by the San Jose Sharks. Mm-hmm. In fact, he can jump right onto the Devils and be a top 3 prospect. It shows you just how dire their situation is on defense.
He might jump on there and be a top 3 defenseman.
He might. He probably is. And I think, to me... if I'm a Devils fan, like, there's no reason to rush. And it's not, it doesn't mean that Reischer is doing a bad job. It's just, it's a long con. And I think you're cheering for Rasmus Dahlin. I think you you want a pick in the top two of the draft next year because the Devils don't have that mega horse defenseman to build around. Yeah. And they may have their future first line center in Nico Hischier. If he goes boom, not bust, I think he could be a Claude Giroux kind of player.
Again, they might have their present first line center.
Yeah, he might. I think he's literally the first line center right now with Travis Zajac. So I think things are looking up at forward a little bit, but on defense, they have a long, long way to go.
Things are looking up, but the Devils are also looking up at the rest of the team.
And also, I thought you were doing a hell metaphor. That works too, because they're looking up.
Right,
they're kind of in hell right now.
And what's also sort of prominent is that most of their best prospects are forwards right now. You look at Mikey McLeod and Joey Anderson, Nathan Bastian. You know, Pavel Zacha has already played NHL games, obviously, but he's still coming up. When you look at the back end, other than getting Will Butcher, they haven't drafted a ton of defensemen in the past couple of years, and obviously that's their need. And, you know, defensemen, they don't step in as quickly as forwards do, but I think that's got to be a focus for them in the next draft is getting talent. And if it's the number one pick overall, then obviously they're in great shape because Rasmus Dahlin's your guy. But that's definitely somewhere that they have to focus on.
Yeah, for sure. So I think we're in agreement. Like, it seems like the Devils, like the Metro's a tough division, but it seems like we agree the Devils are pretty far behind the rest of the pack. And then it gets, I think, pretty murky. And at number 7, we have the New York Islanders, which is so weird because they were close.
I'm not sure people aren't going to like too much.
Exactly. But it's like, then you say, well, who are they going to pass, right? The Islanders were close to the playoffs last year. They were much better underdog weight. They have a lot of depth at forward. You look at their depth chart, and they have a decent amount of talent.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, they just seem to underachieve. And they didn't get great goaltending last year. They've lost Travis Hamonic from the blue line. It puts pressure on, hopefully, a guy like Ryan Pulock to step in. And it's weird. You know, we love John Tavares. Everyone loves John Tavares, but he's coming off not a good season, probably his worst season since his rookie year, I think, at least on offense. And they bring in Jordan Eberle, who everyone...
And he's not signed.
And he's not signed for next year. That's a distraction. I talked to Stamkos last year when he was starting strong. He said, absolutely, it was a distraction, and I'm playing better with the contract out of the way. So I think players are lying when they say it's not a distraction.
They absolutely
and
are.
And you've got Jordan Eberle coming in, and people are saying, oh, they're going to light it up, the World Juniors. But Eberle didn't score that much playing with Connor McDavid. Is he going to necessarily score playing with Tavares? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, and I mean, can he be trusted to play a top-line role with the kind of lax defensive game that he has? You know, I mean, that's got to be a concern, and I think it was a big concern in Edmonton. I mean, you look at this team, and boy, oh boy, they should, like, they should be better, right? Like, they look like they should be better. But they don't do a lot to a lot to excite me. I mean, I think they've taken some steps back with some of the players they've let go in the last couple of years, and they're still trying to figure it out. And I think until this Tavares thing gets decided one way or another, either he signs or, you know, and I've been saying since day one, I'm convinced he's not going to be playing on Long Island next year. I'm also convinced he's not going to be playing in Toronto, so shut up, all you Islander fans.
At least don't need
to. So shut up, all you Islander fans who keep saying that I'm saying he's coming to Toronto, because I never thought he was coming to Toronto.
We are Toronto media. We do not think John Tavares is coming to Toronto.
I never thought he was coming to Toronto, and I think even less now, because it's less of a fit now than it's ever been.
Right.
But I until this whole sort of soap opera gets worked out, I think it's going to be the sword of Damocles that hangs over this.
it's interesting because, you know, if they were in the Atlantic Division, I think we'd be a little more bullish on their chances.
Yeah, we would.
But it's so tough in the Metro. Their goaltending is just okay. The defense is just okay. I think, you know, Anders Lee is probably a little underrated. You know, he had a great offensive season.
34 goals.
Yeah, and what I'm interested in is with Doug Weight behind the bench now, will the kids actually get a chance to show what they can do? I mean, we've been talking about Ryan Pulock for a couple of years now, never really got a crack under Jack Capuano. Anthony Beauvillier, can we see what he can do? Matt Barzal, can we see what he can do?
Because Josh Hosang,
are we going to see what he can do? Because if you add those three forwards and that one defenseman, all of a sudden your offensive ceiling's a lot higher than it was when you were relying on the Steven Giantas, the Nikolai Kulemans, the Jason Chimera types. So I think there's room for improvement there, and I could see the Islanders finishing as high as fifth if everything broke well for them, and that might be a playoff spot because of how weak the Atlantic is.
That's
kind of their ceiling for me.
I agree. Like, I think all seven teams are in it, and if the Islanders finished with 98 points and made the playoffs, I wouldn't say, oh my god, I'm stunned. Mm-hmm. I'd say, yeah, I can see it. Like, if things broke right.
Yeah.
Because there is enough talent on that roster.
But as we say, they could finish with 95 and be seventh.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing. I mean, seventh place in the Atlantic Division is not, you're not horrible if you're doing that, right?
Right.
It's a good division. In the Metro, that's what I meant to say. Yeah, it's going to be, like, I think we're all in agreement that we've said that we think the top five are going to be playoff teams in the Metro. So, if you finish a couple of points out and you're on the outside looking in, that pushes you down the pecking order.
That's right. And then the next team we have that's not in a playoff spot, but I think might be in one by maybe next year because they do have a nice youth crop, the Philadelphia Flyers. We know they've got that great young defense core. Ivan Provorov looks like he's going to be an absolute legit number one horse, Norris Trophy contender. You still got Ghost Bear. You got Travis Sanheim on the way. You've got Samuel Morin on the way.
None of it matters.
You got to let me get to the but.
No.
But
yeah,
it's still too soon because a lot of these guys aren't going to be broken in yet, aside from Provorov. So it looks like the Flyers, to me, they're a team to get excited about, but more for next year.
I don't care about anything you just said.
I know what you're going to say.
I don't
you
care
should.
About yeah. anything
oh, because goaltending.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
This
exactly.
is recording.
That's what it comes down to.
I get
in
it.
Philadelphia
now.
Yeah.
comes down to goaltending. If Brian Elliott can recapture whatever it is that he had a few years ago, great. They might compete for a playoff. If he goes to Philadelphia and, like all the other guys that have been Philadelphia, forgets how to play the position, then they're effed. They're hooped.
Yeah,
so that's it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how all those other guys are. Doesn't matter how many good young guys they have. Doesn't matter who they have behind the bench. Doesn't matter any of that stuff. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. The grand irony.
I like how Kent just turned in like an inbred from the deep south. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. The grand irony of all of this is that the last great goalie the Flyers had was Ron Hextall. He is now their GM.
Yep.
And he has done a very good job collecting goaltending prospects lately. Carter Hart leads the list. You know, Maciej Tomek is there. Like, they've got actually, like, you know, probably four or five really good young goaltenders at various stages of their junior careers, but none of them are ready yet.
Yeah.
And what we're dealing with right now is, you know, that great young defense corps is coming, but, like, Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek, Wayne Simmonds, how long are those guys going to be effective NHLers? Is it three more years? Is it five? Is it two?
Right. Well, and I think,
is it all going to line up?
But a guy like Giroux has to kind of, he has to kind of put the big boy pants on and turn things around a little bit, too.
And
yeah,
there you
does.
Go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
is it a matter of all these disparate parts that are rising and falling at different times and Philly just never putting them all together?
Yeah.
That's fair. And I look at the Flyers' depth at forward, and I think, you know, some Flyers fans are pretty excited about it, but I think there's a lot of projection going on there. Like, we don't know Oscar Lindblom's going to be ready this year. And even Nolan Patrick, I mean, I'm still overall bullish on his career, but to me he's a prime candidate to be a slow starter just because all the injuries he had to deal with, the multiple stomach surgeries in the offseason, wasn't on the ice.
So
I could see him getting off to a slow start in his NHL career. And then, so if you sort of, if you don't assume Patrick's going to be effective year one, you look at the depth chart other than the top line, and, like, to me it looks pretty thin at forward. I don't think this team's going to generate a ton of offense. They traded away Braden Schenn, and I don't think they could really afford to trade away Braden Schenn. Like, I don't think Yuri Ladera is not going to replace Schenn's production.
Yeah, their bottom six is really, like, I don't know where the goals are going to come from those guys.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to get some, you have to get some production from those guys, and I just don't see where it's going to come from.
Yeah, I agree. So,
yeah, I think Jordan Weal would be one option in that respect. He finished off really strong. And it'll be interesting to see how Travis Konechny progresses at sort of the top end of things, too.
Right, and again, so much projection, right? Like, the fact that Konechny according to most prognosticators, is projecting to be the first line left winger. Like, that's a little scary. The fact that you're depending on him in that role right off the bat, I think, is a red flag. Whereas Braden Schenn was the top left winger last year. Right now he's playing center in St. Louis. It does feel like there are too many question marks in Philly for them to be a playoff team this year. But I still think lots of reason for optimism. They got a great farm group. And when we do our upcoming issues, Prospects Unlimited, Future Watch, I'm sure they're going to rank very highly. Mm-hmm. Now we get to the playoff teams in the division. And this next team is my favorite sleeper team this year, my breakout team. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of analytics people are probably saying the same thing, so it's not like I'm Mr. Original here. But the Carolina Hurricanes, number 5. Mm-hmm. Yes, they don't have a true first-line center, but to me they've got almost everything else you need on a good hockey team.
Including a defense corps that is all Americans, and it's great. Mm-hmm. Like, speaking of defense, that's a solid, solid top four you got going there. Mm-hmm. Probably a solid top six. Again, it's going to come down to what we talked about with Philadelphia. I mean, can Scott Darling prove that he can be a number one guy? He's certainly proven he can be a great backup, and he can jump in when need be in crucial situations and, you know, and carry the team for a little while. But, you know, it's a completely different, you know, as Jonathan Bernier has learned over the course of his career, it's a completely different ball of wax to be a number one guy. And we'll have to see how he does with that.
Yeah. The big difference between Jonathan Bernier and Scott Darling, about 6 inches and I don't know how many pounds. But, that's going to be the big acid test for Darling, is if he can be a 60-game guy. What's interesting to me is, you know, they don't have the number one center, but I think you can get to the playoffs without a number one center. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the Ottawa Senators are a great example of a team that's built in an unorthodox style. Mm-hmm. And I think Carolina, with that great defense corps, and you look at, like, Jeff Skinner, Sebastian Aho, Justin Williams coming in. Elias Lindholm has been quietly pretty good in his NHL career. Yeah. You know, like, Jordan Staal can still be that shutdown guy. Marcus Kruger can be a shutdown guy as well, but more of a penalty killer. And, you know, if they can just find that right mix up front, then I think they only need so many goals. Because they're going to transition the puck up the ice very nicely. They're going to get the puck out of their own zone very nicely, thanks to guys like Slavin and Pesci and Falk and Hanifin. I don't think they can do damage in the playoffs yet just because of how they're constructed, but I think they can certainly get there.
Right. I think you've nailed it when you describe them as an unorthodox team. They actually remind me a lot of the Nashville Predators pre-Ryan Johansson.
Totally.
So they didn't have that first-line center yet, but they have that great defense core. They have a lot of defensively responsible forwards, good two-way guys. And their goaltender, because, of course, you know, if you look at Pekka-Rinne's analytics, he's been a below-average goalie for the past 5 years. He only has to be good. He never has to be great because he's got that great D-core in front of him.
Right.
And I'm not actually super high on Scott Darling, but if he's even a 9-10 save percentage guy for them this year, I think that's good enough goaltending for the rest to work. And I don't think they're going to be a dominant team, but they're going to get, you know, enough scoring just to meet that bare minimum. And I think they're going to be a very good defensive team with okay goaltending. But I agree, it's fair to have questions about Darling because such a big guy. I don't know if he's fit enough to handle that huge workload.
Yeah, that'll be an issue for sure.
Yeah, that's why we have them on the bubble. Like, I think if they get in, they're going to be in the last seat. They got a good coach, Bill Peters.
Really good coach. You know, when you hear Bill Peters, I defy you. Like, if you heard Bill Peters, Jeff Blashill, and Mike Babcock talk without seeing their faces, you don't even know which one is which. They all sound exactly the same, and they talk exactly the same. They seem to use the same terms and everything, but Peters is a good coach.
He is, yeah. I think I picked him to win the Jack Adams, because Jack Adams always goes to coach of most improved team.
Right.
Yeah.
So I figured.
I think I had him in there, too.
He's a natural pick.
Definitely.
Actually, I think next... Oh, no, never mind. Columbus is third. Next, we have the New York Rangers at 4. And they're a team that's sort of in super win-now mode. Everyone asks the question every year, how many more years until, you know, Lundqvist is out of his prime and this team, the window closes and suddenly the Rangers start to sink. I don't personally think they're there yet because they did bring in Kevin Shattenkirk and they brought in Mika Zibanejad last year. Their forward core is still big and fast and has a decent amount of youth. So I still think this is a playoff team. They don't wow me by any means, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, they're a good team. They're a good team. They should be fine. They could, you know, they might finish higher than fourth. They might overachieve and surprise a little bit, but that's all they are, is a good sort of decent playoff team. Might win around, you know, could win around, might win two, but not a team that looks to me like it's ready to take it all and to kind of you know, get into that elite level of teams in the NHL. I think that window slammed shut now. Whether or not Henrik Lundqvist is good, bad, or otherwise, I'm not sure that he would be enough to carry this team into the, like, the upper echelon of the league. Like, I could see them being good. You know, they're kind of like Toronto was the years they were kind of good. You know,
right. like you know, the end of the Pat Quinn era.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe surprise you make a conference final, but you know, when it really comes down to it, not really ready for the prime time.
Yeah, I really like what their defense is looking like right now. Obviously, Shattenkirk was the big free agent of the summer, and it's kind of fun how, you know, he took less term and probably less money than he could have got in other markets, but he wanted to be with the Rangers, and the fact that he's a right shot defenseman, that gives Ryan McDonough a perfect complement, so it'll be fun to see what they can do. Brady Shea is coming up. Brendan Smith was solid for them. Nick Holden actually had a really good year, which is kind of funny because he was like 27 at the time. But there's sort of a nice little, you know, sleeper that they got there. They sort of unlocked something in Nick Holden. You know, when I look at their forwards, it's a lot of, like, really good players, but, like, nobody elite.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, Elias Andersson could make this team out of training camp is really kind of odd, because you wouldn't think of, like, New York as a team that lacks depth, because they can basically get any free agents they want. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you look and it's like, well, yeah, I mean, he's a great two-way player, even though he is only, like, 18, turning 19. But I mean, they really don't have a lot of centers in the mix right now, and you know, they might need him in that role, and it's going to be interesting to see how they can stack up against some of the other elite teams, particularly in their division. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, when you look at the playoffs, like, can you see them stacking up against Pittsburgh when Crosby and Malkin are the centers? I don't see them winning that matchup.
Not a
chance. And I don't see Henrik Lundqvist fending off those kind of attackers in a seven-game series anymore. So I think that's their challenge, is that they're going to be pretty good, but not good enough.
That's fair. And, you know, I think goaltending is an even bigger concern for them this year. And we know Lundqvist is in decline. He often starts slow, and he recovers throughout the season. But the difference is, past several years, he's had Cam Talbot behind him. He's had Antti Raanta behind him. If they need to rest Lundqvist, if they want him to only play in the 50s games-wise, they had a great safety net. But now the safety net is Andrei Pavlik. He washed out in Winnipeg, a team that had terrible goaltending. He was the number three on a team with terrible goaltending. Yeah. I'm very concerned if
that's,
I'm
but
the
Rangers. Could argue that's why it was so bad. Because he wasn't number one.
That's true. I'm sure that's what he would say.
Let's turn that frown upside down, guys.
Mind blown.
When you can get the third best goaltender on a non-playoff team, you got to do that.
You got to jump at that.
You got to make that move. Especially when he's old.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a problem, because if Lundqvist, I mean, his body's breaking down a little bit more in recent years. If that happens, then you're going to Pavlik.
Remember we saw that Brandon Halvorsen guy in Traverse City?
Well, we saw him
a couple of times. He's like,
but he never played.
He's 18 feet tall. And
yeah, he was always hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only thing.
That's the really big goalie. He's like Ben Bishop. Yeah.
We physically saw him there.
Yeah.
But we didn't actually see him on the ice.
Right.
Cool story, bros.
Yeah.
All right, so we have the Rangers, you know, in the meh category. I think now we get to the top three in the division.
The Metro.
The Metro. Although the Metro is anything
Wordplay.
But meh. Hey, I think in the top three.
Top
three, we've got teams that are legit Stanley Cup contenders. And the number three spot, we do have the Columbus Blue Jackets. The big question with Columbus is, were they the cute, cuddly overachievers last year, or is that who they really are? And are they going to maintain this newfound level of dominance?
And can John Tortorella continue without wearing out his act? Mm-hmm. I think that is going to be an absolutely crucial and huge factor for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Because he's got a shelf life. He's got a shelf life. We all know it. And it's just a matter of when do they start to to tune that out. And if it's this year, then they could be in some trouble.
He's like the Mike Keenan of this generation.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Short, you know what? Shelf life, yeah. Now this, I haven't historically been a big Tortorella fan, but when I look at the Blue Jackets roster, it feels like the type of roster that
he could have success with
because you know, like, we know he's a huge Zach Werenski fan.
Yeah,
I've spoken to Tortorella about Werenski, and he basically said, "You can call me anytime if you want to talk about Zach Werenski." Nice. He loves the kid. You look at their captain, Nick Foligno. Nick Foligno is a lunch pail guy,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Brandon Dubinsky.
He's been with Tortorella on two separate occasions now. Boone Jenner is a good farm boy.
His name is Boone, for crying out loud.
He is never going to talk out of turn. He's going to do whatever he can for his coach.
Jack Johnson. That's okay. That's yeah. Stretch,
hey, Jack Johnson's a fitness fanatic, though. He's a hardworking dude.
And like,
he's jacked.
Yeah. And like, you know, Seth Jones, son of a professional player himself. And, you know, Popeye Jones did some coaching as well in the NBA. So I feel like if any roster is going to continue to be tuned in, it's going to be the Blue Jackets. And my only question on the high end is, like, is Alexander Venberg the center that can take on, again, like, can he be their number one guy if they have to take on the Crosbys, the Nicholas Backstroms, that sort of player? Maybe their defense core and goaltending is so good that it doesn't matter as much as it would on another team.
Yeah.
Because you do have Sergei Bobrovsky, you do have Werenski and Jones. Maybe you get away with it, particularly if Artemi Panarin can be the same guy in Columbus as he was in Chicago.
And that's the interesting thing, too, is he looks across the ice and the other side of the ice, and he sees Nick Foligno instead of Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, I'm one of those guys that thought that Artemi Panarin brought out a lot of good in Patrick Kane, too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Patrick Kane has had some good years because of Artemi Panarin. So I'm not willing to sit here and say, oh, well, the kid, you know, he's going to be a bust without Patrick Kane. Maybe he's going to be just as good.
Yeah, and it's, you know what? Patrick Kane's two highest point totals were his two seasons playing with Panarin. So one, he won the scoring title, and last year, I think, he had 89. So there you go. And to me, that's the wild card in Columbus' season. I think they have a pretty high floor. But to me, the ceiling is going to be about, well, A, Panarin, can he help them generate a lot more offense? And I think the major wild card is Oliver Bjorkstrand. Because what Columbus doesn't have, and I think you saw it in the playoffs, they don't have that terrifying 40-goal threat, goal scorer that makes the other team shake in their boots. Mm-hmm. Bjorkstrand has the talent to become that kind of guy. Like, he's, you know, he was a 65-goal scorer in junior. He scored in the AHL. He's been a big goal scorer everywhere he's played. So I'm not saying he's going to be that this year, but if he can make that leap and become a top line or even a second line player, it's going to add a new element to the
Ken
team.
Ken Atkinson seems to get his numbers.
Like, yeah, he's got the score 35.
But he doesn't. Like,
when you
think of guys that you've shaken your boots about,
you know what? It's because he's adorable. Because he's adorable. He's a tiny little dude who's never had any facial hair, and he's so nice. Like, he's adorable.
Yeah.
And I think you don't think of him as a threat for that reason.
Yeah.
You know?
But be forewarned, he will score on you.
He probably will. Now we get to the top two, and Washington is one of the most interesting teams in the division this year because it's no longer the usual, they're going to win the President's Trophy and bomb out early. This is a different team. No team got more gutted in the offseason. They lost Alzner, Shattenkirk, Justin Williams, Marcus Johansson, Nate Schmidt. So the big question to me is, are they going to be a dominant team again? And also, does that matter? I mean, is it just is it more about getting hot at the right time? Because all the points in the world weren't enough to get them far in the playoffs.
It doesn't matter. And, you know, maybe this is the year that they sort of accept that and let their foot off the gas a little bit in the regular season and then have something for the playoffs. But I, you know what? I'm done with these guys. I'm done with you. I wash my hands of you, Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
Like, last year, after they beat Toronto.
Oh, yeah, this is a good story.
Ted Leonsis was in the dressing room. Half the Board of Governors was in the dressing room. They flew them all in, their families. I could have sworn that there was a Stanley Cup sitting in the corner because these guys were so happy. They were all taking pictures. Everybody's hugging, cheering. Oh, wonderful this, wonderful that. It was like, you guys are going nowhere.
Yeah.
Get a grip. You just won one round. Smarten up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I give up. I'm not trying. I can't figure these guys out. That's it. I'm done.
My big
worry. That's all. Don't get me started.
My big... I got a couple of worries, actually, with the Washington Capitals. First, the defense corps. The losses they took were just brutal because they don't have a good pipeline. That's the thing. Because Washington's been good for so long, they've traded away a lot of draft picks. They don't even have a lot of first-rounders to choose from. They're depleted now. And, if Madison Bowie and Christian Juice can roll into that blue line and be effective right away, then that'll go a long way. But I don't have, super high expectations for that happening. I think the best course of action is obviously to get these kids in slowly, but I don't think Washington has that luxury right now. And then you look up front, and, Alex Ovechkin, he can still score goals, but not like he used to, but he's still getting paid the same amount. And Nicholas Backstrom still look great in the playoffs. Evgeny Kuznetsov, I think he's probably their most dangerous player other than Backstrom. But you're set up weirdly here because Ovechkin is taking up that big chunk, and he's your captain. It's not like they're going to trade him, but he's not a first-line left winger the way he used to be. And Andrei Burakovsky is still a bit inconsistent. So, how are you all set up here? That's my big concern is... how is this going to work, particularly in the playoffs, if you're having struggles on your defense corps moving the puck up the ice?
Well, the way Shattenkirk played when he was there and in the playoffs, I'm not sure that losing him and Carl Alsner is not a case of addition by subtraction. In as much as now we find out what Dmitry Orlov's going to have to take a step up. Some of these younger guys are going to have to, even a Madison Bowie or whatever, And we saw it in Nashville, when Ryan Suter left, Roman Josi had that chance to become what Roman Josi is. When Weber left and when all these other guys, when these guys leave, it gives somebody else a chance. It gives Ekholm a chance. It gives Ryan Ellis a chance. So I think if some of those guys can can do that, then I think that's actually going to be a good thing for the Capitals.
Yeah. But here's my worry. I think Nate Schmidt was that guy.
He was,
And they lost him to Vegas.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So I think the chain got broken there, and it was already kind of a tenuous one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that.
I think they're going to be fine. When you look at what Barry Trotz had to work with in his early years in Nashville, he still has a lot more talent on this team than he ever had on those Nashville teams. He still has, Oshie, Backstrom, Kuznetsov. But I think the ceiling has disappeared from this team. Especially when you look at a guy like Jacob Vrana, Burakovsky, super talented guys. But again, you want them to be your gravy, but they're being dependent upon. If they don't score, if they don't finally bust out, if Vrana doesn't become a full-time NHLer, a 20-goal scorer, and if Burakovsky doesn't bust out and become 25, 30-goal scorer, I just don't know if this is going to be as dangerous of a team offensively. Mm-hmm. You still have Braden Holtby in net. They're going to be fine. I still think they're going to be one of the stingiest teams in the league. But I suddenly see a little gap between them and our number one team. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And disclaimer immediately for all the people saying, I've seen it on Twitter already, they went out on a limb picking Pittsburgh first and to win the cup. That is going out on a limb, you idiots, because we're picking Pittsburgh to friggin' three-peat, which has not been done in 35 years. We're going out on a huge limb. No, the ones saying that to us probably don't read us because they're like, "Oh, I subscription canceled."
Unfollow. Or this blog better not be about something.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you read it and find out what it's about?
Well, they like to read the headlines only. But that's the thing. So I think we actually are making a kind of bold prediction by saying Pittsburgh is going to three-peat as Cup champions, especially. When, to me, the biggest hole in the roster right now is third-line center. Nick Bonino is not being replaced. That was always it's funny, the 09 Penguins had Jordan Staal in that third-line center role, and then these Penguin teams have had Nick Bonino in that role. So that was a nice element that made Pittsburgh that much more dangerous. But at the same time, this is such a system team, and it doesn't seem to matter. You have your big stars at the top, and then you just keep subbing in more depth. They've done an amazing job bringing in guys from the AHL and Wilkes-Barre. They work so well under Mike Sullivan's system, even the defense corps, which didn't have Chris Letang last year, now gets Chris Letang back, at least until he gets hurt again, which is unfortunately probable. It's probably going to happen. But still, to me, getting back Letang maybe offsets the loss of Bonino at the forward group. And just they work so well under Sullivan. They know they play that speed game, north south stretch passes. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to do it again. Do you guys agree?
I think that they. I agree that they're going to be in the totally in the mix again. You know, I mean, it's too hard to say whether or not. You know, they can go through another four rounds at 3 years in a row and a World Cup or, yeah, like the World Cup they had last year, all that combined. I don't know if they can, if they will, but they certainly can, and they're positioning themselves to, because you got two of the top five players in the world. Doesn't matter. That gives you such an enormous advantage. Mm-hmm. Right off the hop, that, you know, of course you got to be considered a serious contender when you start with those two guys.
Yeah, and they know the template. They know that they don't have to win the division.
Yep.
They know that if they're playing a game seven on the road, that's not a big deal for them.
And if they play Washington in the playoffs, they know they're going to win.
Yeah, and if they play Columbus in the playoffs, they know they're going to win. Yeah. Even though, like, we're big, you know. We're high in Columbus, but I was going to say their other Achilles heel is if they play the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, because that's been just death for Columbus. It's so interesting because, like, I like to joke, Matt Murray at this point must just assume that every NHL season ends with somebody handing him the Stanley Cup. Because
that's how he doesn't know any other
reality. Yeah. He doesn't know anything other than that. That's what always happens. And, yeah, as I say, like, with Chris Letang coming back, It's all about the playoffs for the Penguins, and, you know, they can use the regular season as a bit of a petri dish, where they're not as deep right now, but maybe Zach Aston-Reese becomes a pro faster than expected. Maybe Carter Rowney takes another step. Maybe Daniel Sprong, after some good AHL seasoning, comes on at the end of the year in the second half and does some Jake Guentzel-like things.
Yeah. It's certainly not unprecedented with this
It's team. Not unprecedented, yeah. And they have the luxury, as you said, of having that great high end with Crosby and Malkin and Kessel, where you can let the kids play around a bit, and you reap the benefits eventually.
Yeah, and the way they develop these kids in the AHL, it's like they come up, like Brian Rust, Connor Sherry, they arrive ready to function in that Sullivan system, and they have so much speed. And to me, Guentzel, he's fascinating because he adds a new element to this team where maybe he's a 35-goal scorer this year. He certainly he played like one last year and in the playoffs. And he wasn't a high-end, you know, first-round pick, but he wasn't a fluke either. He's different from Sherry and Russ, and that's not a disrespect to Sherry and Russ, but Guentzel was highly regarded coming up, so he's got the pedigree, whereas Sherry is a guy you don't know. It's often a matter of who he's playing with, whereas Guentzel, I think he's going to be dangerous wherever you put him in the lineup. And to me, this Pittsburgh team's offensive ceiling might be higher now than it was a year ago, especially when the Tang's back on the power play, too.
Right, yeah.
So I think it's fair to call them the team to beat, not just in the Metro, but the Eastern Conference and the NHL. And that concludes our previews of the Eastern side of the bracket. Next week, we'll start with the Central Division in the West. Thanks for listening, everybody.